It's 7:30 Saturday morning. I woke up in the city that never sleeps. And here, at the West 72nd Street entrance to New York Central Park, dogs tug on leashes and joggers yawn and stretch, getting ready to run. Take just a few steps into the park, and the air quickly cools and the city quiets. Nearby, a dogwood tree, and next to it, a tall, lean man in khakis with a backpack and binoculars turned the wrong way around. He's using them as a microscope to study a leaf.
My name is Ken Chea, and I'm a New Yorker, and I'm a graphic designer and an artist. I'm just a guy that really got interested in the park and its wildlife and its plant life, and I've been walking around the park as a birder for 20 years, and only in the last few years did I discover the world of trees.
And how? Ken Chea and Ned Barnard spent the last 2 years surveying every square inch of Central Park's 843 acres, counting and mapping virtually every single tree of significant size. The result? Central Park entire, the definitive illustrated folding map.
All 19,933 trees on this map represent real trees in the park. It's a work of many hours and miles walking through the park and identifying trees and placing them precisely where they occur.
So if I pull out your map, I want you to find this tree.
Okay, we're standing in Strawberry Fields. Strawberry Fields is this teardrop shape.
Right off 72nd Street.
And there's the Imagine Mosaic just across the path, and we're here. And this is the American elm we're looking at right here.
It's unbelievable that you've mapped every single tree.
And the American elm has these lovely serpentine limbs that reach out and snake around.
It's enormous.
Yes, it is. Here in Central Park, you will find the largest stand of American elms in the world, in the entire world, and that's on the Mall. There's also the largest line of American elms on Fifth Avenue just outside the park, and that runs for nearly 2.5 miles from 59th Street to 110th Street.
Which is the length of the park.
That's correct.
Let's take a walk.
People come here think this is what Manhattan really looked like before the city grew up, and it's not true. This area that we call Central Park was actually a desolate swamp.
Then in 1857, landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted and his partner Calvert Vaux won a design competition. And over the next 16 years, they transformed the swamp into Central Park.
And what I discovered as I began to walk through the park and learn how to identify trees and learn how to appreciate them, I began to see Olmsted's vision. I began to see how he used trees the way an artist uses color and texture, and how he created walls, corners, curtains, all sorts of textures by his use of and his masterful planting of trees.
This place that looks so natural is totally contrived. He designed every nook, cranny, rock, tree, blade of grass.
It's the most natural-looking, unnatural place probably on the planet.
I was reading about Olmsted, and he would play tricks, optical illusions with foliage and trees. He would put dark trees in the foreground and then the light-colored trees in the background, and it would give the sense of depth.
Yes. Frederick Law Olmsted was an illusionist. He was also a brilliant mind who people said could think and see in terms of decades. So as little saplings were being put in, he could actually envision what they would look like 10 or 20 or even 30 years later. What he wanted to do there, I believe, was take people out of the congested concrete sea level city experience and give them an open, wide pastoral experience here in Central Park. Once this enormous masterpiece of American design and landscaping opened, I think it taught the people of New York and then the nation that cities could be beautiful. They didn't need to be all buildings and tenements, and you could have a nature experience in the middle of one of the most populous cities in the world.
Okay, so let's keep walking.
over in that grove over there is at least two trees that are one of a kind in the entire park. There's an unusual tree called a Franklinia, the only one in the park. And just beyond it, if we were to take this walk around, there's an olive tree, a Russian olive, the only one in the park. Over here, I want to show you something because this is a real rarity. If we walk over to this little rock outcrop, and actually right here, this is good. If we stare straight through, we're looking at three very tall trees at the end of this meadow. These trees are known as dawn redwoods. Now, the interesting thing about dawn redwoods is they were believed to be extinct until 1941, when a grove of them was discovered on a high mountaintop in China. So here we are. We're looking at something that history had written off with the dinosaurs, and there's three of them at the north end of Strawberry Fields.
I have a question for you.
Oh,
I'm not a tree guy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that this is a sycamore.
You are half right. This tree is a London Plane. It's a hybrid between an American sycamore and an Asian sycamore. London Planes are hardy trees that tolerate drought, compacted soil, air pollution, people on cell phones, you name it. They're tough New York trees.
And if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Absolutely. And Robert Moses, who was the Parks Commissioner in the 1930s, planted almost all of the London Planes we're seeing now in the park. This probably wouldn't have been the choice of Frederick Law Olmsted to plant that many, but this is the way the park has evolved from its earliest days to today.
This, I'm looking, you can almost not take a perspective here, a view it, without seeing birds and birds and birds.
Yes. We're hearing robins, catbirds. I hear a red-eyed vireo right above us. The trees create this wonderful habitat for birds. I've been birding for 2 decades in Central Park. It is one of the world's most famous places to bird. I've met people who have traveled here from Asia and Europe just to bird in Central Park. Forget about Broadway and Times Square. They come here for the birds. And one of the reasons we have so many birds in Central Park, well, I could give you two very good ones. Central Park is located right on the Atlantic Flyway. So it's a important stop right on the migration route. But two, the variety of trees that we have here that produce food for birds in all seasons, whether you eat insects or you eat seeds or you eat fruit or you eat sap or you eat insect larvae that's underneath the bark, there are trees here that provide all of that. It's an abundance of food source for birds in all 4 seasons, particularly during the migration in the fall and spring.
It smells fantastic. It's amazing. It's like being in a flower shop or something.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that because we have wild roses here in front of us.
That's what that is?
Yes. We also have, and these are all plantings, of course, we also have linden trees that are still in bloom that we're getting some fragrance from. And when you realize that many of the flowers on the trees are only here for a short time. We have a very, very small window to enjoy the lovely colors and the aroma, and it only happens once a year. And maybe we have 10 days or maybe 12 or 14 days. It makes me think deeper thoughts about time and the environment and decisions that I want to make about my life.
How so?
Well, I could decide to spend a good portion of my time in an office, and I've done that for 30 years. But what I've discovered in the last 2 years is this was my office. I was working in the park for 2.5 years. There were times when I had to convince my wife over dinner table discussions that I was in the park all day, but really, believe me, I was working. And of course, she and my son Joan and Lucas both would sometimes roll their eyes and say, well, there goes Dad talking about trees again, and he's been in the park all day again today. But now they're seeing, with the map being out and orders coming in, and I'm grateful for that because I want to share my experience and what I've discovered and the appreciation I have for this wonderful place called Central Park with other people.
Well, Ken, thank you so much. That was great fun. I've learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. It was my pleasure. Anytime you want to come back to Central Park and take a walk with me, just give me a call.
Birder, tree lover, and graphic artist Ken Chea. He and Ed Bonnard created Central Park Entire, the definitive illustrated folding map. For photos of our trip around Central Park and a link for more information about the map, head to our website, loe.org. On the next Living on Earth, a musician sings the praises of an island nation's forests.
Madagascar is known for its biodiversity and for its beautiful endemic species. And if we cut these trees, we'll have no more animals living in them. We'll have no more trees. We'll just become a desert.
Preserving Madagascar's forests, next time on Living on Earth. Our crew includes Bobby Bascom, Eileen Balinski, Ingrid Lovett, Helen Palmer, Jessica Elise Kern, Ike Shriskandaraja, and Jeff Young, with help from Megan Miner, Gabriela Ramino, and Sammy Suzer. Our interns are Annabelle Ford, Christy Pereira, and Annie Sneed. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Lirish-Dean composed our themes. You can find this anytime at loe.org and check out our Facebook page. It's PRI's Living on Earth. Steve Kerwood is our executive producer. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science. And Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield invites you to just eat organic for a day. Details at justeatorganic.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners, the Go Forward Fund, and Pax World Mutual and Exchange Traded Funds, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. On the web at paxworld.com. Pax World, for tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.